Hi guys, welcome back to Gen Z Talks, where I invite Gen Zs or young people from all over the world to have meaningful conversations and explore all kinds of topics. I'm the host, Yuli. From episode 2 on, every episode will be focused on a theme to foster more in-depth and meaningful dialogues. If you like my content, please don't forget to like and subscribe. Hi guys, welcome back to Gen Z Talks. I'm the host, Yuli, and today I invited my boyfriend, Eric. Eric, please introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, my name's Eric, Yuli's boyfriend. I graduated from the same university she did, Georgetown University, 2 years ago, and since then I've been working as a software engineer for a health technology company.
We've been dating for about 3 years and a couple days.
Yep.
How do you feel it's going so far?
I think it's going well.
Okay.
I mean, good 3 years hear. Is a long time. So.
Okay. Talk about how we met.
Okay. I remember, so I was part of this club in Georgetown called Break Squad. It's a...
Hoya Break Squad.
Hoya Break Squad. It's a breakdancing club. And
it's extinct now.
Now it's extinct, but... I remember one of my friends who used to go to that club, I think brought you and one of your other friends to just like go visit, I think. And that's when I first saw you, but I don't remember like distinctively like talking to you or like interacting with you that much like one-on-one.
I remember you teaching me break dance.
Yeah, So when new people come into the club, we usually give them a rundown of some of the basics. So I think
I
might have...
Is that a headstand?
Yeah, no, it was a baby freeze.
Baby freeze.
It's like a move where you you put your head and two of your arms, one of them is in your stomach and the other one, yeah, and you sort of go at an angle, sort of upside down, mm-hmm. And that's one of the basic foundational moves that we usually teach.
Yeah, I think breakdance moves are really hard. You know how even though I dance, it's still hard for me to get breakdance moves because I think the skill ceiling is already very high. Yeah. Like, it takes a lot of effort to learn the moves. But also because when I first met you, I already thought you were very attractive. So I didn't want to try really hard because if I failed, then I would look really, I would really embarrass myself. Yeah. Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, so I think the next time, the time when I really got to know you better was when our mutual friend had us go out for a pho together. And at that time...
What's pho? You have to this into context.
It's a noodle dish. It's kind of like...
It's a Vietnamese rice noodle dish.
Yeah. Vietnamese rice noodle dish. You usually serve with slices of meat in there, and they have like... other things in the broth, like onions and certain vegetables.
Yes. Guys, if you haven't tried it, 10/10 recommend. It's so good.
So yeah, so we were at the restaurant, and I don't know, we were just chatting, and it was pretty... I felt like our conversations were really, really natural. Like, for meeting someone for the first time.
You felt so?
Yeah, I thought so.
For me, I think I created a lot of opportunities for us to talk. I wanted to make a really good impression, so, and also wanted to attract your attention. So, like, when we were, like, you thought it was natural, but I intentionally created a lot of opportunities. For example, when we were ordering pho, first of all, I didn't know what, like, flank, like, ribeyes, I don't know what those stuff mean. Mm-hmm. And when you were ordering, like, when you're like whatever you order, and I was just like, oh, yeah, I want the same stuff as him. So like, it's just like a small stuff like this, but I feel like for some reason it can make you have a better impression on me, I guess.
Yeah, so I think we were, anyways, we were just hanging out. Like after that time, we would just hang out a little bit more whenever we would go hang out with our mutual friend. And then from there, we just sort of talking more. And there, we had a winter break where I think I was in New York, and we talked a lot on WeChat, and we watched a Korean drama together. It's called Bokju, the Weightlifting Fairy. I highly recommend. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I love that. That's my favorite K-drama.
But we got a lot closer because of that. Very wholesome. And then after winter break, I felt like that's when it started to become a little bit more more obvious that, or at least I felt it was more obvious that you liked me. Before that, I didn't know. And then also, I started liking you a lot more, so.
I think I picked up the cues that you liked me during winter breaks when we were watching K-drama. You know, like, between friends, like, we can probably watch K-dramas together, and that's fine. Mm-hmm, yeah. But every time after every episode, you would, like, just start rambling and talking about other topics that's not related to K-drama at all. Mm-hmm. Like, for, like, an hour every time after every episode. So I was just like, oh, like, he doesn't want to hang up, so he probably has other intentions. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that when I came back to the U.S., you were like, do you want me to pick you up? Even though you did not have a car and you still don't have a car, like, you were willing to take the metro and take the bus, basically the public transportation, for like an hour to pick me up. So I think I kind of picked up the cues from there.
Yeah, I picked up the signals.
Yeah. So do you think we had a culture gap? Because this is, I wouldn't say like interracial, but maybe more like intercultural, because I'm Chinese and you're American. Even though you're half Chinese, half American, I don't think you've received any sort of Chinese education. Yeah, you had never been to China before you dated me. So I guess, did you ever feel like we had any culture gaps?
Yeah, I think so. Like, for me, like you said, my dad was Chinese. And then I think all throughout my childhood, my grandmother from my dad's side lived with us, and so they would always be teaching, always be talking Chinese in the house, but I never learned Chinese like fluently. And also, whenever they came to the United States, it was very much that they wanted to, I wouldn't say abandon, but they were very ready to adopt American culture. And so a lot of the traditional Chinese like culture elements weren't really a part of my upbringing as a child, and so, like you said, I was never really exposed to a lot of the Chinese culture. But I will say there wasn't that big of a cultural difference, because you did come from, you know, you were an exchange student for a while in high school. So, like,
yeah,
you were attuned to some of the more American side everyday living, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but there were still some differences. Like, I think the biggest culture shock for me was just the expectation of the gender roles, I think, in mm-hmm. like a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like you were telling me, in China, it's very much that like the guys really got to stick their neck out, and it's very much like guys have to pay for everything and treat the girls, and it's more so the girls are just receiving. And I think that was even true like in older times in the US,
mm-hmm.
but now in the US it's very modernized. I think there's a big movement for like equality in terms of like relationship roles. Like, I think it's still very much like men always have to propose, but not even like taking it that far, just simply like first date, like who pays. It's very much more like accepted that, you know, you'll split the bill on the first date or something like that. Or like even like when you have an anniversary or when you want to give each other gifts, very much expected that like the gifts go both ways, as opposed to just one person giving someone all the gifts.
So I think in my case, the thought that guys should take the initiatives to pay for everything, on the first date or on anniversaries or whatever, is still very widely accepted in the Chinese community. I think mostly it's from the traditional view that, you know, guys have to take responsibilities more in families, and guys have to do more stuff. So I think I was also under the influence of the older generations. For example, my mom always thinks that, like, you know, you should take the first step in buying me a necklace or pretty accessories or whatever, or otherwise it means that he doesn't love you. But nowadays in China, the younger generations are learning to take equal responsibilities on the guys' and girls' part to pay for their gifts or for their dates and stuff. And I think we are both making efforts to create this equality in our relationship.
I think it also like makes sense from the time period that it came in, where like back then, guys were the primary like workers and earners of money in the family, and women didn't really earn their own income. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, it does make sense for the guys to always pay for everything because women didn't have their own income, right? But in today's like society age, especially in college, I mean, you're not even, unless you have an internship on college, mostly you're just riding on your parents' money. So it kind of doesn't make much sense for like, you know, someone to be paying more than another person.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so in addition for the culture gap, I think that there's some other maybe small things that were a little bit different. And those, I think, are like the things that I experienced as like growing up in America as a child, like the TV shows that I watched, you know, there'd be references like Jimmy Neutron, Brain Blast.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be something that, you know, Yuli wouldn't get because, she, you know, in China when she was growing up, she didn't have those kind of shows to watch.
Well, we have other TV shows and animation shows.
So part of our relationship is just kind of exploring the different shows and things that, you know, maybe each of us don't really know.
And catching up on each other's childhoods.
Yes, yes, catching up on each other's childhood. Another one would be like translations. There's some like words that are more complicated in English, I think, like biology terms. Like animals.
That's not complicated. It's just I've never been educated in biology.
Like animals is a big one. Like I remember we took a trip at Harvard and we were in the Harvard bookstore and we were in I think a kids section where they have like picture books of like animals, and there was like a sea section where there was a whole bunch of sea animals, and you're like, what's a manatee? I've never heard of this animal before in my life.
I still don't remember what is a manatee.
So that's just like something cute that I just think is really funny. Something we can like joke around if we take like biology quizzes or something.
Yeah, not limited to biology or just anything childhood-like, but also the American pulp culture and like the meme culture is something that I think you have to develop it as you're assimilating to this culture.
Yeah, I felt like when I first met you, you weren't as attuned to like memes, but like the more time we spent together, the more our humor for these kind of like internet jokes like kind of matched, right?
Yeah, remember you were introducing me to Keys and Peele.
Oh, Key and Peele, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
Key
yeah.
and Peele, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they were funny though.
Oh yeah. I think Key and Peele is more like mainstream humor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you're not mainstream humor.
No, I think Key and Peele is funny too, but I also have a sense of deep fried humor.
Yeah, okay, special humor.
Actually, you know, cultural gap provides some kind of like excitement as the relationship, right? It's like if you two know like all the same stuff, there's never an opportunity to learn or grow.
Mm-hmm.
But like part of the relationship is like sharing things that the other person might not know
and co-building your knowledge.
Yeah, enjoying and learning about the other person.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's why there's always been a debate on should you date someone who's like very similar to you or should you date someone who's the polar opposite to you,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So it's not just a cultural thing, but it's like in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how does it feel dating someone who's not your nationality?
I mean, and that's a different kind of question too, right? I mean, it ties in with the culture thing as well. But in addition to that, there's other like for, specifically for China, I know there's a huge nationalist kind of feeling where like Chinese citizens have a lot of pride in their own country. And coming from America,
some Americans do too.
Yeah, some Americans have a lot of pride for their own country. You know, America's the best and all that. But for me, it's like when you date someone who has really strong nationality, it's a little odd because it makes like planning for the future, I think, more challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you really like this person and you want to continue to be together with them, but at the same time in the future you have to think about how or where you're going to stay long term.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming from different nationalities sort of complicates that factor, right?
Yeah, I think this topic is always something that we keep exploring.
Yeah,
remember at the beginning of our relationship when we always argued, like the first couple months, like that we kind of transitioned into a more peaceful and harmonious relationship, but like the first couple months we would always argue about where our future leads us.
Yeah.
You know, it's because we come from different backgrounds and I want to go back to China or I want to settle in Europe, I want to work in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But then you want to stay in America.
Yeah.
And you want to keep here. So it's always been something that we have to keep exploring on. Yeah.
It's also challenging with jobs. I mean, I'm lucky to be in a field where I can really go anywhere and still find a decent job, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, even the part of nationality, which is like the different language piece, like even though I'm half Chinese, I can't speak fluent Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So going and living in China would require, you know, not only the language barrier, but also being proficient enough to be able to get a job there too.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just something that, it's another level of barrier that makes it kind of challenging to like plan stuff out and to envision that kind of future.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take it one step at a time, I feel like it's not, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not something that you can't overcome.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a perfect time for us to transition into the question of how we deal with conflict, since we are already touching
mm-hmm.
up on this subject. So I think in my impression, now we have a very harmonious relationship. Like,
yeah.
we rarely fight, and if we fight, it's about League. It's about League of Legends or like just some small stuff
yeah.
that we make up in like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the beginning of our relationship, especially for the first couple months, I remember we would always argue huge.
Yeah.
And like I remember I would like run out of your apartment or my apartment and then like go cry and talk to my friends because of like the arguments that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of them were about where our future leads us and stuff. So how about we talk about how we deal with our conflicts?
Yeah. So I think at the beginning, we were very different in terms of like dealing with conflicts. So when we would have a conflict, for me, I'm very confrontational. Okay, confrontational with people that I care about. If I don't care about that person, I don't really care. So I'm not going to like stick my neck out to try to resolve a conflict if
mm-hmm.
I'm never gonna, if I don't really care about that person. But
mm-hmm.
in this case, you know, I do really care about you. So in the beginning, I'm very confrontational. Like if there's an issue, I want to understand why the issue exists, get to the bottom of it, and figure out a way that we can resolve the issue with actions, right?
I think so. I'm that, the polar opposite.
Yeah, and you were the polar opposite of that when it came to
dealing
the
with
of our
confrontations.
Yeah, the beginning of the relationship.
Yeah, I think this has to do with our personalities as well. That's just how I deal with all my conflicts in life. So not even just relationships, but also, you know, like school conflicts or conflicts
mm-hmm.
with families and stuff. When it happens, I sort of just want to avoid it. I don't know why. I wasn't very good at being confrontational. And whenever we started arguing, I just kind of wanted to, I wanted to close myself out.
Mm-hmm.
And in Chinese, there's this word called 冷暴力, which means a kind of cold violence that can hurt you. So the more cold I am, the more I think it's going to hurt you. And that's how I'm going to deal with this conflict.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think it's good for dealing with conflicts at all. And this is where you come in.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that like you said, is not very good with dealing with conflicts, because basically at the heart of it, like what you said, your intent is to hurt someone, right? You want to close yourself off. And then by closing yourself off, you're hurting them. And the premise behind that is basically like you're offended, you're hurt, so you need to get revenge and hurt the person that hurt you.
Yeah.
But I feel like at the heart of mine, it's really about solving the issue. It's really about
mm-hmm.
making sure that we make up and amend. And but part of that was that I think at the beginning we didn't see eye to eye on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would constantly be me trying to talk to you and you pulling yourself away. And then we would end up with these big fights about that kind of stuff.
And I think this is where actually the problem of short-term relationships, or
mm-hmm.
I guess just like relationship problems in young adults in general, like Gen Z people or in their young 20s, because if both parties are avoiding types,
yeah.
then you kind of just never solve the problems.
Yeah, you just hide them, sweep them under the rug.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I think, and then after a while, I would say that like usually how our fights would go, like after a while, after you calm down, you'd be more, I try to get you to be more willing to talk about it. And that, yeah, I mean, at the beginning, I'm guilty of it. Like I'd be kind of aggressive with my confrontation, and that's something I need to work on. That's not really great. But as we sort of calmed down and took more time, we sort of talk about things like slowly and calmly, and I think that like helped to solve the issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is what helps to resolve some of the conflicts. Mm-hmm. Is like communication, really. Mm-hmm. Like basically you always see those things about like, if I don't know what you're feeling and you don't know how I'm feeling truly, then like we'll never be able to see eye to eye. And mm-hmm. like part of like solving issues with relationships is like seeing eye to eye, making sure that you're understanding your significant other and that they're understanding you, and that way you can come to an agreement or come to a conclusion or conflict or solve whatever your problem is.
Mm-hmm. I think to reach this stage though, we also worked out, because I remember in the beginning when we were arguing, you just wanted to solve the problem like straight on.
Yeah,
like you just wanted to like solve it right then, right there. But I was closing myself in and mm-hmm. I didn't want to solve it. So I would be more agitated the more you wanted to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So I think later, as we learned each other more about each other, you sort of waited for me to start calming down and then started communicating with me.
Yeah.
But after I calmed down, like I'd be guilty because I would know where I was wrong and I would know where you were wrong too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's when communication really starts to work. But if you just want to solve the question like right there, right then my brain was still like on a heat. Mm-hmm. My brain was still like, why are you trying to talk to me? I hate you. Like, I just want to break up right now. That's what my brain is thinking. So
yeah.
I think it's really important to figure out each other's personality and like my point where I'm going to calm down. And then that's when you start to come in and start communicating.
Yeah. It's not good to push the buttons right away
mm-hmm.
from what initially I want to do. But, you know, it's more about like the compromise kind of thing, like sort of knowing when would be a good time for the other person and understanding them. It comes with time and it comes with
effort.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. So it's been 3 years that we're dating. So what factors do you think makes a successful relationship? Yeah, I wouldn't call us like a very, very successful one, but I guess as like a young couple that's been dating for 3 years, if people who are like in a short-term relationship who are seeking a stable and serious relationship in their young 20s, like what kind of piece of 10 cents would you give them?
Piece of 10 cents? There's a couple ones. Yeah, buzzwords. Oh yeah, buzzwords. That's what I was looking for.
Okay.
So there's a couple buzzwords, right?
That keywords.
Keywords that can make a answer this question. I think it's loyalty, there's trust.
All right, chicken soup time.
I mean, you asked me.
Dude, our listeners are going to drift away as soon as you start hitting these buzzwords.
But that's basically it.
Yeah,
right?
But I think like...
And time. Time is another one. That's
mm-hmm,
good.
Mm-hmm. What if people don't want to contribute their time?
Well,
it's a hard question.
Yeah, if you don't have time for a relationship, then I mean, you just don't have time for it. I mean, relationship is like a big deal. It's not something that you can just kind of like have for fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe like relationships start out like as something that you know you're just interested in some person, you just want some fun. But if it grows and you find that you two mesh and you're able to work out your issues and solve your problems and you really like this person, then like yeah, it'll grow.
Yeah, I think at our age, it's fine if you want to be single. It's fine if you want to be a short-term relationship. If mm-hmm. you don't want to commit, and it's fine if you want to be in a long-term relationship as well.
Yeah.
But I guess it suits all types of personalities. And I guess just don't be anxious what stage you're on, because I think things flow naturally. And if you find the one that, you know, no matter what conflicts that come through, you guys can always work out, then you would know that it's suited for a long-term relationship. And otherwise, if the person doesn't suit me, then doesn't suit you, you don't have to really desire for a long-term relationship, and just you can just naturally let it flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there'll always be like conflicts that you can have with somebody, so I don't think it's like for us, I wouldn't go into it and say like, oh yeah, when I first saw you I knew it was going to be like a long-term relationship. Like
mm-hmm.
when I first saw you, I didn't know. When I first met you, I didn't know, really.
It
was more of an exploration kind of thing. And well, like when I first met you, obviously like we talked about, there are differences, there are issues that we had to work through. So I wouldn't say that it's like, you know, if someone doesn't match with you like at the very start, like on the first or second date, then just like close yourself off to the possibility. It's mm-hmm. more of a, it's a progression kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's like as you keep seeing the person more, you every time you see the person, you ask yourself, is this someone who I'd want to see again? Is this someone who I want to see again? And if you keep answering yes to those questions, then eventually it'll be longer and longer and longer. You'll get to know each other more and be more comfortable. And those key things that I talked about before, they'll build up. Like the trust part, the loyalty part, they'll all build up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess this is a good segue into what are some advantages and disadvantages of a long-term relationship in our early 20s in young adults, mm-hmm. do you think?
Well, it also depends on what you want, right? Like, if you're the kind of person that eventually would like to start a family and you know that, then having a long-term relationship in your early 20s gives you, one, some experience in dealing with something more serious that could potentially turn into that. Into what you want. It gives you a head start. It means that if you wait too long in your life, you might not get enough opportunity or enough chance to get to know that person. Mm-hmm. And you'll just sort of jump into it, because I know that there are some cases where people will, you know, start dating later on in their life, and because they just want to settle down at that point, they only date them for like a year and then get married after a year, mm-hmm. and then after they're married they realize, wait a minute, there's some fundamental problems that we can't work out.
Yeah.
And then they end up getting a divorce and it becomes really bad, like mm-hmm. a really bad situation, because they didn't get to know the person better. So like, I guess the earlier you start, the longer you'll get to know the person.
Mm-hmm.
And also the longer you date, the more experience you'll get. So even if things don't work out, you'll still have experience that you can take away and things that you learned along the way,
because
mm-hmm. you'll mm-hmm. know more about yourself, what you do want in a successful relationship, and you'll know why that one failed, mm-hmm. right?
I guess a disadvantage that comes with this long-term relationship is that, you know, after a really long relationship, the breakup will be a big heartbreak.
Yeah, it'll be a big letdown, and I wouldn't say you throw away your time, but it might feel that way at the start. Like, you might feel like you just wasted a lot of time
mm-hmm.
and invested a lot into someone that you won't end up with.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it's important to know that, like, you're still learning.
I think it's, I consider every story in my life a piece of experience. Like, whatever experience it is, bad or good, I still learn from it. So just know that after a long-term relationship, even if you guys break up, I think you still had a lot of life lessons that you learned, even though you can't realize immediately, you feel really sad. I think it'll contribute eventually to your life lessons, eventually. If you're in a marriage, eventually, if you're in another long-term relationship, you'll apply what you learned to your new relationship, and it'll definitely work out more smoothly mm-hmm. than what you did before.
But that being said, there are like benefits to being in short-term relationships too,
mm-hmm.
which is basically that you get to explore more, you get to figure out, and also there's only a certain fraction of someone's like life that they can reasonably expect to like date around a lot,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's sort of in your early 20s. Like, you know, when you're still in high school, you're not really old enough to do that. You don't really see enough people.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older and you start and you have a job, obviously it depends on person's occupation, depends on their lifestyle. But generally, I'd say that for most people, the older you get, the less opportunities you get to go on different dates.
Mm-hmm.
But in like your early 20s in college, that particular lifestyle, you're meeting a lot of people. There's a lot of people on campus. I know now on COVID you don't really do that, but
yeah,
but I mean, you have the opportunity there, so if you want to, there's lots of different experience, I guess, you can get.
I think it's also really beneficial if you haven't figured out what kind of person you are and you haven't figured mm-hmm. out what kind of person you're looking for. So
exactly, yeah,
that's when you want to try to match yourself with the people that you think that you can get along with and experience who you think you're eventually going to end up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So now it's January. So it's been how many months in quarantine?
Well, we started in March.
March.
Last year, right?
Yeah, I came back from Greece. In March.
9 years? Or 9 months?
9 months, yeah. So it's been 9 months in quarantine, which means we've lived together for 9 months.
Yeah.
Under the same roof, in the same bedroom, in the same apartment for 9 months. So what do you think about cohabitation in young couples? And specifically, at what stage do you think is appropriate for couples to start living together? Obviously, I think regarding privacy, regarding cohabitation, these are the topics that, you know, are very controversial and are very much personal preferences. So,
I mean, I think if you're ready for it as a couple, it's fine. But cohabitation really either makes or breaks your relationship, I feel like, because you either, like, find out that you can... I mean, if you're both serious, right? If you're both serious, you either find out that you can live with this person and keep living with them, or you find out that, wow, I really don't like this person and I can't fucking stand them.
Right? Yeah. I can't see their face.
Yeah.
I just want to get out of here. Yeah.
And I mean... There are also, like, advantages of it, right? Like, I can see you every day. There's no, like, sort of barrier to getting to see that person. Like, if you live in different places, then there's always the, like, oh, yeah, I got to go drive or walk or whatever you do to transport there. Mm-hmm. And there's time that you have to invest to see them, right? But that's sort of taken away, is you can spend, you know, all of your time with them. But then there's also, like, problems with that. Like, for example... You know, if you shift to from one perspective to the other, which is basically you spend all your time with them, or you don't, you only see them at specific times, right? Those times that you see them specifically, or you plan to go out together, you're always doing something interesting there, because you literally plan time for you to do something interesting.
Exactly.
So you'll go out, you'll eat, you'll talk together, you'll spend time together. When you cohabitate, there's never any real incentive to plan time to see each other. So it's more like sort of unspoken, where, like, maybe some days she'll be doing her own thing and I'll be doing my own thing. But then we need to also not forget that we should have time that we spend together. So sometimes that causes conflict, sometimes that causes like tension, I guess, that, like, oh, maybe are we spending enough time together or not? Are we not spending enough time together? And it's, again, I think it goes back to communication. If you just be open about it, like, if one person's feeling that there's not enough time being spent together, or if one person feels like they're not...
I think we're doing this pretty well.
Yeah,
like,
I think
whenever
so.
We feel like we lack something in our relationship, then we openly talk about it.
Yeah.
I remember in my previous relationships, I would always, if I get mad at something or if I want something, I wouldn't talk it out. I would make my man, my boy... think what I want. I would make them deduct what I want.
Yeah, and if he doesn't get it, you just get mad.
Yeah, which is I realize is kind of doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it kind of gets myself into a negative perpetual cycle, which is, why don't you get me? And if you don't get me, you're stupid. You're not the one that I'm looking for. I need to break up with you.
Yeah.
And that's definitely something I worked on, and I think we're executing perfectly in this relationship, which if I want something, then I talk to you openly about it.
Yeah.
I don't feel ashamed, because if I want it, I want to tell you straight ahead, like, my real self, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no mind readers here. I think that's kind of a toxic
I think
kind
that's,
of behavior.
Yeah, that's very important. Yeah. Going back to cohabilitation, I think, in my opinion, one thing that's, like, really important in cohabilitation is, as Eric mentioned before, because you're seeing each other 24/7, things start to becoming not as exciting, because you're not intentionally planning to do something. You're not going to Six Flags, you're not going on roller coasters, you're not going on, like, cute dates every day. So I think it's important to also take some time out of your life to make it special. So, for example, we spend our anniversary, we planned all kinds of activities, like making egg tarts and playing Pachisi, like learning and playing Pachisi together. And doing puzzles and stuff, and sort of, I think, I prefer doing activities that we don't normally do to make this day special. I think this is important to me in cohabilitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even sometimes I'm not the best at that, because, again, I'm a little introverted, but we try to do our best with, like, what we can during, like, the pandemic, right? Obviously, we can't. The easy thing would just be, like, you know, like, go to a movies, or before the pandemic, I'm saying, the easy thing would be, like, you know, go to movies, go out to eat, go to a bowling alley, things like that. We can't really do now because of the pandemic, so we have to come up with other stuff that we can do.
I've discovered so much stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think we can definitely transition into our last topic, which is, I think we can end this podcast on a very fun and positive note on the hobbies that we picked up in this relationship.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess I can start first, continuing our topic just now of like the hobbies that we kind of started picking up in pandemic, which I'm grateful. Even though the pandemic was unfortunate, we still figured out a lot of stuff that we can do in our very bedroom, which is, for example, board games, chess, Pachisi, and I started playing League of Legends.
Yeah.
And I started playing Pokemon and other stuff. Yeah, I think these stuff, I would have never otherwise gotten in touch with them if it weren't for this pandemic, because I would keep, you know, eating out every day and meeting out with my friends, which is also nice. But I think discovering the virtual side of the world was also super fun and super eye-opening to me.
Yeah, I think for me, like I said before, I'm very introverted. So for me, all of this stuff like gaming and board games and that kind of stuff, that was all very normal and natural to me. It's something that I did mostly, and the eating out stuff, eating out part was not something that I did a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the pandemic and us living together kind of really brought us together in terms of at least sharing the hobby that we can mm-hmm. with this hobby. So before the pandemic, Yuli got me into a lot of different hobbies and different activities that I normally wouldn't have done. Like, for example, you know, dining out or eating out. I mean, of course, I would do that before, but not to the extent that I did when I was with her. And also, like, going to museums, going to concerts, things like that I normally wouldn't do. I started doing with her and exploring, and they were really fun and enjoyable. Yeah, another one was traveling. Like, we traveled to Boston, and that was also part of, like, growing up with my family. My family never really traveled or went on vacations. And as a result,
I think they placed the value of saving the money more than spending it at leisure activities, I feel like.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't really go on vacations or go to different places and explore. So that was something that Yuli introduced me to. And
also traveled to China.
Yeah, so and we really enjoyed it. So, you know, we had the Boston trip, the China trip. We went to New York.
Philly.
And Philly, all these different places that were really, really interesting and fun to go to and explore. And were really great. And then fast forward to the pandemic, Yuli started learning more about kind of the hobbies that I had previously, the more introverted kind, which is more like gaming. Like we mm-hmm. played some of the old Pokemon games, which she'd never played before. We were playing Fire Red. And after we finished Fire Red, we're gonna be playing Gen 5 Black and White, which is actually my personal favorite generation of Pokemon.
What a plug of Pokemon.
Yeah. And then we got into Pokemon Go as well. Funny enough, in the pandemic, we didn't really walk out that much, but it did give us an excuse to go out and mm-hmm. exercise a little bit, which is important during the pandemic. And then League was another big one. I played League a lot, and Yuli actually got into League as well. She made her own account. I think at the beginning, you weren't as into it, but I think the more we played together, the more into it you got.
I got competitive.
you got pretty competitive now. It's just something that we can do that we're both interested in. We both love to do.
I think that it's really eye-opening to me in terms of how much joy this can give me. Because when I was little, you know, I was raised by my mom, who stresses that education is the most important thing. School is the most important thing. If you're playing games, you're not concentrating on school. It's also the fact that, you know, China has a really competitive market, student body as well. So I pretty much spend my whole childhood just studying. And even if I was trying to develop my personal interest, it would be something alongside of academic or something that would bring me benefits.
Yeah.
So I never really got into... Like, in middle school, so many friends of mine played League of Legends, but I would only think, oh, you guys are only playing it because you're not good at school. You suck at school. That's why you're finding another outlet. But now I realize, like, it was definitely not the correct thought. On the opposite, it can help you relax. In fact, I play it after school in college, too, because it can help me relax and it's fun.
Yeah, I think it's important. I don't want to say it's important for your significant other to share the hobbies, because obviously there are some, like, not everyone's different and not everyone will like the same stuff. Like, obviously there's some hobbies that you have that I can't do. Like, for example, singing. Like, I think I'm physically incapable. My vocal cords aren't good enough for that. But obviously, I think sharing a hobby or sharing interests with your significant other is really important and really cool, because it just gives you another aspect, something to make the relationship more interesting, something to mm-hmm. bring you guys together and give you a reason to spend together, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't have nothing in common with your significant other, except that you just watch movies and go out to eat, that's so boring. After the second or third date, you know, there's only so many movies you can watch. It's like, yeah there's really nothing really, like, interesting mm-hmm. that you can do together. But when you share a hobby, it doesn't even have to be, like, gaming or anything like that. But as long as you share some kind of common interest, it helps a lot, mm-hmm. I think
I remember this story that my friend back home, when we were hanging out in Chengdu, she asked me this question that she had in her relationship. She was like, my boyfriend is always playing this game on his phone. I think on some other games as well. So she was like, so what do I do? Like, he's always playing games and he's not making time for our relationship. And I was like, and she was like, how do I talk him out of it? Yeah. And so I said, how about instead of talking him out of it, which he would not do, because if you tried, he would not do, then maybe try it with him. So if you try it with him and you enjoy it, you guys have one more common interest. But if you try it with them, you don't like it, how about after a game, you can say, let's go for a walk. Or after a game, you can say, let's go out to eat hot pot together, mm-hmm. and change the common activities, because you've already done one common activity with him. So now it's his time to share another common activity with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, time to play Leak. Okay, guys, that's it for today's episode 2 of Gen Z Talk. If you liked our content today, please like and subscribe. And we will see you in episode 3.
Bye-bye.